Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martins. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this. Welcome to the pod, Charlotte. I am so excited to learn all about your travel adventures and how we can like get on that track with you. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so pumped. Okay, so Charlotte, why video?
I love to just tell stories. And for me, I am such a visual person that for me, I can follow stories and things and learn better just by being able to see things. And so for me, video has been the best asset that I can use to be able to tell stories, whether that's for my business, of my own personal adventures, and just in the form of education as well.
Okay, so how did you get into what you, so tell us what you create on the interwebs with video and like how that journey happened.
Yeah, so I create a lot of educational and informative travel content. I have been on this journey for a little over 2 years now, starting on the freelance side, and then October 5th of this year of 2023 marks 2 years as full-time LLC, my own business. And my mission as a business is to help make travel more safe, cost-effective, and accessible for everyone. And so I do that by sharing stories of my travels, of education, of how to travel better at a way that fits your current lifestyle and budget, and just sharing stories of people that I meet along the way, because my life motto is to make friends in unexpected places.
That is a great model. I'm a super extrovert. People always are like, I think a little taken back by that because I'm like, like the energy on the pod is like my energy in real life, usually, especially when I'm around people, because people charge me up. And I'm always doing that. Like I talk to everybody, like that whole like never eat lunch alone. Like I live that. I think it's a great way. I always love to ask people, especially locals when I'm traveling, because I travel a lot for work and stuff. It's you have one day left in this city. Where do you eat and what do you do? And I always love the response. I find some of the best places to eat and fun things to do because I will go often without an agenda, and it gives you a really great way to like learn something through the eyes of locals because they tend to avoid all of the tourist stuff.
Yeah. It's like there's certain things about being touristy that can be fun, but then there's also something that's just beautiful about being very local and learning the lay of the land.
So are you like a full-time travel creator?
Yes. So I would say full-time creator, and I do a mix of both travel influencer stuff under Char from Chicago, but I also do content creation for other brands, UGC. My big scope of work is pretty much anything within photography, video, and I'm a licensed drone pilot.
That's a very specific skill set. Okay. So how did you dive into those earning opportunities? Like, I know that probably a lot of us start off because it's something we like to talk about. Like, how did you get onto this path? Like, how did this happen?
Yeah. So I went to university for international business with a concentration in entrepreneurship and Chinese. So I'd always kind of had a passion for entrepreneurship and doing my own thing, but I thought it would happen a little bit later on in life. I kind of thought my entrepreneurial journey would really kick off in my 30s. And I actually just turned 27 2 weeks ago. So I didn't expect my entrepreneurial journey to happen as early as it did. But after I graduated, I had done a few jobs that I didn't love and I didn't have great experiences with. And I was at a pinnacle point of my career that I was switching some things up when the pandemic happened. And I had been living in New York when March of 2020 happened. And from there, I was like, well, All right, we got hit the hardest and we got hit first. So we're just going to have a hard reset and just think about things. So from there, I used my first stimulus check to buy my drone, and I immediately got my Part 107 drone license and started learning how to fly that. And then the opportunity came up that my friend said, hey, do you want to come work remotely on Hawaii with me for 3 months? My uncle has an apartment that he's not using. And I said, great. So I went and started creating more content and flying my drone around Hawaii. And I said, you know, I really need to get more serious about all of this. And so I came back to the mainland and I moved to Washington, D.C., which is where I currently am based now. And I went all in with my business and said, okay, I need to learn how to do this. And there are some days that my head feels more above water than others, as it does with most people. But it started a mix of, okay, who are the people that I want to work with? Who aligns well with what I'm doing? And then I just need to be creating. And so a lot of opportunities that have been inbound for me were actually because I was creating content that blew up about these brands on a non-monetization level, but just because I was passionate about these brands, I was talking about them, and I knew that what they offered would be valuable to my audience. And that's what sparked a lot of my inbound inquiries, especially early on.
Okay. So if we want, because UGC is like a hot topic right now, but it also seems to be kind of like elusive as to how to get into it. What would you recommend as a path us content creators could go on to do that? Because we have the skills and the tools, but we don't necessarily, I think, have or know a way to find the people that would use this skill or benefit from it or all of that kind of stuff. So how can we bridge that?
Yeah. So there's three very kind of actionable ways that I would talk about. One, it depends on if you are on some of the influencer side of things. I always bundle my packages with brands. And so instead of saying, hey, I'm only going to do influencer content, I'll say, hey, well, what if we do three videos instead, and we'll do one influencer and then two videos that you can post to your accounts. So wow. It's a little bit of upselling, but it's also we're going to talk in a different tone when I'm talking to my audience versus when this massive company is going to be interacting with theirs. And that's, I think, the best part about UGC is that you're tapping into these people who understand the language that is these platforms. So why not just have them tweak it a little bit to get your brand specific voice? So one, I would say, is kind of upselling and combining influencer and UGC offerings. But you also might not be on the influencer side of things. So I would recommend going into, there's a lot of websites that act as that middleman. Mm-hmm. So places like Aspire IQ, Captivate, obviously Maverick, there's a lot of them that do just UGC related things. And so I've had a couple partnerships that are just UGC that I've been able to find on these websites that are just, hey, this is what our budget is. This is the deliverables we're looking for. This is the timeline. Are you interested? And you apply. And if the brand thinks you're a good fit, they see your portfolio. That's a great way to get started if you don't have a large following otherwise. And then third, I would say I have done a lot of external outreaches just of local businesses around that I've seen. Hey, I go to this restaurant. I go to this shop a lot. You don't have a strong social media presence, and you kind of pitch the social media manager angle of, I think you could bring in a lot more business if you just started implementing video into the what you already are doing.
All right. So I think then the question that I'm going to have in relation to this is like, okay, how do we then approach brands? So like, we all create different kinds of content, right? And I know it's probably a matter of like reaching out to people that are working in those places, spending time on LinkedIn, finding those places. Have you found different or unique ways to create content for people? So I think that one of the things that we kind of get trapped in as creators is we only can ever think of like the brands we use or the things that we know. So like if I'm in MySpace, like it's like, oh, I'm going to go talk to StreamYard and Adobe and, you know, the people that are quote unquote bigger players in my space, tools I use. And then they're like, well, we already have people, or we're like at this place with it. But maybe for a smaller creator, they're not there. how do we go about finding the people and the brands and the companies and the tools and the things that make sense for us that would be more obtainable, that aren't oversaturated or are unattainable currently because of like where we are with our following?
Yeah. So I would say one, those websites that are, that have the pitches that are already out there, like what mm-hmm. I talked about, those are a great resource to see kind of one who is currently running campaigns, because maybe if this brand is running a campaign around one product, if that product doesn't interest you, you can look and say, oh, well, actually I use this product from them, or I have a cool idea about another product that they sell. And that would be a great starting point. Honestly, mm-hmm. sometimes just wandering the aisles when you're grocery shopping or at Target can give a lot of inspiration of looking around and saying, hey, I don't use this, but I see a lot of people that are drawn to these type of products. Or maybe if you have a partner, seeing what kind of products they're using frequently, because you might not be overlapping, and seeing that, oh, there might be a huge market of men's shaving and like razor products that people aren't covering, but it's not something that you would think as the women that we are, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I think finding the smaller ones too, like ones that are starting up, like, I don't know about you guys, but I always get emails about different things. They're like, oh, can you do this? Or you can do that, especially like around Amazon influencer related things. Mm-hmm. I, at this point, just mostly filter them out, or unless it's like a product I really want to do, because I don't do content for without a fee. Yeah. After all this time, and honestly, none of us should. Even if it's just like $25-$50, like, but they need to put more invested than just a free product, right? Yeah. But you know, that's a good place to start and probably build up a portfolio. Even like if you can find 5 to 10 companies that you can create content for or about, even if you're not getting paid by them, to build up a portfolio, I think is a great way to start. When I wanted to sign up one of my sponsors, I literally created a video about their product and was like, hey, I created this video. This is how it's doing. People are really liking this. And they're like, whoa, I didn't know you even existed. And then they were like paid attention and were much more willing to, I think, care and be interested in what was going on.
Yeah. And especially thinking about local small businesses too, whether that's products, whether that's restaurants, coffee shops, those often they think, oh, well, I could never afford something like that. Where you're like, okay, well, actually, maybe you don't know what you think it would cost. Or if we bundle things, there's always ways to make a deal work if both parties are interested.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. So what has been one of like the funner, cooler campaigns that you've gotten to do? Tell us about that journey.
Yeah. So I would say probably the coolest campaign that I've ever gotten to do was a mix of media. I got to do a campaign with Southwest Airlines back in February, and it was a mix of one influencer video on my TikTok, but the partnership, the core of it was to be doing TV interviews. Okay. So I went down to a studio in Atlanta, Georgia, and I filmed 19 back-to-back interviews, both live TV and radio, talking about spring travel, specifically through the lens of Southwest. So it really combined what I talk about as a professional traveler, is about how to find tips, how to make travel more cost-effective, but doing it in a partnership with Southwest and highlighting the ways that they make that possible. Mm-hmm. And it was so fun, so creative, because I had never done full reporting, having like an earpiece in my ear, not being able to see the person that was interviewing me, but to have the flexibility to just be on the spot was very fun. And then it translate to then talk to my audience through a video on my channel as well.
Okay. Look, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it. All right. Now, I always love to pair with this. Tell us about a bad brand experience that you've had so that we can learn from that drama that happened from that.
Yeah. So I would say a bad experience was the partnership. A brand had taken me along for a long time, and we were supposed to sign an annual contract, and we ended up doing a small 1 month partnership like prior the year before. They said, okay, just to gear us up for the upcoming year. And that partnership went well, and it was a mix of influencer and UGC. And then coming into that next year, things started slowing down and nothing had been agreed on and there was no contract. And we got into Q2 and they had said, yes, we want this. They sent a contract, and the contract was just unsignable to me as a creator. And it was really hard because this was my dream brand. I loved them. I was loving the team that I was encountering. This was, quote unquote, my big break. And the contract was unsignable for such a massive brand that, not exaggerating, could ruin my life if they wanted to. I said, I can't sign something like this. And I hired an attorney and we were negotiating. And eventually then they pulled out. And I will never know. They said that it was because of budget changes as we were heading into Q3, which already I was like, we were supposed to sign this before Q1. And it was just devastating to me. Like, it actually sent me into a 3-week mini depressive episode because I was like, and which has never happened before, of me thinking, I lost this. I feel like a failure. There were just all these negative thoughts for something that really was either out of my control or I just in good conscience could not have signed. So it was really devastating. But one thing that I've learned from that is that when you make proposals to people, have an expiration date on your rates because you are growing and you don't want them coming back to you 6 months later and saying, yeah, we want to come to this. I'm like, well, my rates have changed. So now on all of my proposals, I put a 2-week, maybe a month expiration date saying the rates are valid for this date. But then in total, like, God works all things together for good fashion, was that two more partnerships came up right after, and both of them together were more than what that one brand was going to pay me for a full quarter.
I love that.
It was a hard blow, but it's one, maintaining professional with all of that, like not giving the brand any bad blood and just being like, you know, like that hurt, but never, it's never worth tarnishing your brand. Like, it's just business. As much as it sucks, it's just business. And so one day maybe the door will open with them again, but the best thing that came out of that failure was learning to put expiration dates on my contract and to stand up for what you know is not right. You do not want to sign yourself away on a contract that is unsignable, especially when you're first starting out. No matter what, a brand is not worth screwing yourself over in a contract, even if it's your dream brand.
Yes. No, here's the thing. I get this one. I relate to this one in my soul. There's this brand. I've known the woman that created this company since it was literally just her and her partner. And now she's like this multi-million venture capital backed company. It's a tool I actually really love. You really believe in it. And it's doing such great, smart things. And I love it, especially because it's such a rare, like, you know, tech, like a, what is it? Silicon Valley kind of company run by a woman. Like it was huge for me. And I, all these things. And I've been working months, if not years, on them from like a slow place to like a more active place. And finally it was like, okay, I was going to start creating content for their brand, like a UGC style for their brand. And they sent me the paperwork and it was like employment paperwork. And I was like, I get that. Like, so I was filling it out. I was going through it, put my information in, all the stuff, and I'm reading the contract. And they have this contract that's in there that's basically like an ownership of ideas. And I responded back to the HR lady. He's like, hey, I signed all this. I filled out these, but these don't apply to me. I'm not an employee. And she's like, oh, this is something like, no, those were intentionally sent to you. And I was like, I can't sign these. Like, you're basically saying anything I create or come up with during this time you own. I get that if you're an employee. I totally get it if you are an employee, because like every major tech company has it, because they don't want people to come up with great ideas and steal their tech and then go off and do something with it in usually a period of time. I'm like, I am a creator, that has brands I work with and other contracts. Like, this is like a conflict of interest in every way. All that, I was bummed because it was good money per video and it was going to be, you know, and to do it. And I had to be like, I can't do this. Like, I legally cannot, like, I want to create all this, but like, this is like, you can't own my stuff. And I, ultimately, like, well, we can't do this then. I was like, that sucks. And then it was also like extra salt in the wound too, because they had this other kid, like this like younger man that was, that replaced me for the content they needed to create it. And I was so pissed and it was so hurt. I was so devastated. But it was like, I had to protect myself. Like, you can't let people own your ideas. Again, I understand it if you are working as an employee for a company who's paying you a 40-hour a week job and benefits and all of these things and investing in you. Talking about a contractor, running my own business, like, this is a totally separate thing. And so it is so hard. And I love the expiration date thing. And I would add on to that, like, don't let people own your stuff. Theirs or the thing is theirs or not. Like, it's such a mess.
Yeah.
So I'm so sorry that you went through that. And I especially empathize with it because I have been through it myself and it's never easy. But I love how you came out. That no allowed for greater yeses, which I think is another great lesson. Like, no's don't always mean never. It just means something else is over there waiting for you.
Exactly. And who knows, just because not now doesn't mean not ever. And I'm continuing to grow. They're finding their way. And so who knows, would love an opportunity with them later, but also knowing that I'm not doing it compromising me and my business in the process.
I absolutely love that. Okay, so we've talked a lot about things. What are some other things that you're doing in your business that bring you revenue that allows for you to travel and live this life that you love that you're building?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different mixes and revenue streams, and some are heavier than others. And especially some of them go through seasons. So some of them, as you and I talked before we had started this, about both of us are into public speaking. And so I've done some public speaking engagements, and that doesn't always 100% align just travel, but expert that I am and someone who has a passion for business and for growing my own business and helping people in theirs. An example, I've done speaking events at different nonprofits. I'm doing a speaking event at my university in November of this year. So public speaking can be an additional revenue stream depending on what you're doing and if you are seen as an expert in your field. So that's something that especially us extroverts enjoy, things like this. So I would encourage people that looking into speaking on your topic or whatever you're passionate about, there's a lot of different areas there. And something that I've also been dabbling in more recently is that TikTok's been rolling out a lot of monetization features within the app. And yeah. One is they have a TikTok creative challenge is what they call it. Oh. And it's, you have to apply or be invited in. And it's for people that have over 50,000 subscribers or like followers on their account, but it's for creating ads for brands, and the ads live natively in TikTok for the brands. It's not on your profile at all. And it, for me, it's been a really interesting way to flex my creative muscle of creating ads around things that are absolutely not my niche in any way, shape, or form. So it's been really cool getting to experiment with that. And that it really fluctuates because you get a part of the video ad spend. So some videos you literally make sense on, like literal sense. And then some you can make multiple $1,000s on. So it's a real roller coaster, but I think it's kind of exciting the fact that there is such a blank slate in front of you.
That's so neat. I know that one of the things I've been wildly impressed with TikTok lately is the TikTok shop feature.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, I desperately need all of the places that have shops to make a place for digital products. Like, I know that one of the things that TikTok does is it allows, like, they manage the shipping situation and they're able to, like, take profits and commissions off of things. But I really wish that they had a way to do digital products. Like, same with, like, Facebook and YouTube. Like, let's make a digital product home. I think the first one that can do that is going to be able to, like, people are going to flock to it and just, like, use the heck out of that tool. Cause I mean, I have digital products I want to sell and I want to be able to reach it in a way, in the same, that same kind of way, especially if I can like get other people to talk about it and give them commissions. Like, it's just such a great way. It's so smart. Like, there's too much shopping on my TikTok. I need to like reset my algorithm because it's costing me too much
money. I know. It's been popping up. I'm like, so many of these videos are all just shop related. I'm like, oh, I want to see more of the creativity, but also I get it, TikTok. Like, you're pushing your new feature.
Yeah. Like, and I get it. And it's a way for people to make money. Like, that's what everyone, yeah, I think loves about TikTok, and they love about all the platforms. Like, it's a way to make money. And we are in this like side hustle economy right now because of the prices of everything and where everything is at. And so I totally get it. It's just, I just want some more variety, not just, yeah, physical products all the time.
Yes, I agree.
Yes. So, okay. So you've talked about something interesting though, which allowed for, you said you have to have 5,000 followers on TikTok. Now, one of the things that's hard, like it's hard sometimes. What is your advice, the current state of TikTok, for creators to get to that number?
So I would say the important thing with TikTok in particular, TikTok is very authentic. And I think that's why I like it the most. I think that's why I have the audience size that I do there. It's my largest platform, is because when you can be really authentic on TikTok, that gets rewarded and people see that. Whereas a lot of times with Instagram and other platforms, things really need to be curated for them to be responded well. And with TikTok, I would say just talking about the things that you're passionate about, just start posting, because you will never know what is going to just pop off. And for me, my first, I had this fear, as many people do when they first start, of, oh, this is going to be cringy. This is terrible. No one's going to like this. What if someone I know sees this? And you get all those negative thoughts in your head. And so when I first downloaded TikTok, I said, you know, I want to make travel videos, but that's, I don't understand the platform yet. I'm just make other videos and see, so I can teach myself. And it was kind of an excuse, but it also ended up being fun. And I got my start making Costco videos. And I was saying, these are the best things on sale at Costco this week. Okay. I had 52 followers and my first video hit 180K views. I said, oh, okay. And it started converting to more followers here, there. And I said, you know, after a few weeks of doing that, probably about a month and a half, I said, I cannot keep pushing off what I actually want to do because I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And so I think I had maybe 2,000 followers at the time, and I posted a video of a hotel in New York City, and it blew up and hit 5.8 million views. And I said, all right. And I gained a lot of followers because of that. And I said, you know, I almost didn't post this. I recorded the voiceover to it under the covers of my bed because I was so embarrassed that someone might hear me. Like, it was just all in my head. And from there, it's those videos that you let yourself be authentic that have been the most successful. And my two of my other biggest videos to date, one is me being very vulnerable, showing myself renting a Tesla for the first time. I'd okay. never driven one. I'm like, I'm a great driver, great traveler, but I was getting into this car. I said, what is this spaceship? Like, I don't understand this. And people enjoyed it because people were able to relate, saying, oh, this would be me if I rented one. Some people thought I was the biggest idiot on the planet, and you just brush it off and you're like, okay, sorry, I didn't know. And then one of my other biggest videos that sparked a lot of things was me geeking out over an A380 landing at LAX, which is one of my favorite planes. And it was the first time I really allowed myself to be the av geek that I know that I am. And so many people responded well to it. It hit like a couple, like 3.8 million or something. And from there, those really authentic videos is what had the highest conversion, and my followers jumped. I have not had a smooth, like slow growth. I've had videos that pop up here and there and it just skyrockets. And so you never know what those videos are that are going to blow up. So it's one, just being consistent and showing up, but two, being authentic. And I know, as you've pulled up my TikTok, like that Krispy Kreme video right there, that one, it's the one down and then to the inside that has 700K plus views. That was just me wandering around Krispy Kreme by myself. I put the Krispy Kreme hat on at one point. I did not expect that video to perform well. I was just being silly in a Krispy Kreme. And then, and everyone loved it. And so I would say just showing who you are online and being authentic, and you never know what's going to stick with people. So some of it is quantity, but just being authentic is really what has allowed me to grow over the years.
And I love that.
So sorry to interrupt our episode. I know we're getting really into it, but are you looking for a powerful, easy to use tool that can help you take your video to the next level? If so, I've got just the tool for you. Today's episode is brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one solution for all of your content creation needs. With Adobe Express, you can easily create stunning videos, design eye-catching thumbnails, clip and trim your videos with ease, and schedule your content for social media. One of the standout features of Adobe Express is the range of thumbnail templates that are available. With dozens of customizable templates to choose from, you can create thumbnails that are both visually appealing, informative, and help your videos stand out on that crowded home feed of YouTube. And when it comes to video clipping, it makes it so much easier to repurpose your content from those long-form videos to all of the other vertical video platforms, and you can easily share them with the scheduling tool within Adobe Express. So if you're ready to take your content creation to the next level, head over to Adobe Express and start your free trial today. You can find the link to get signed up for today over in our show notes at womenofvideo.com. And remember, Adobe Express is the perfect tool for taking your content to the next episode. All right, back to the episode. What are your thoughts on like not being niched down into something? I hate that the algorithms all want us to be something really specific. But what are your thoughts on being something specific on every platform that's different? So I'm like, okay, on YouTube, I'm like the social media video marketing lady. Maybe mm-hmm. over on TikTok, that's where I'm like my behind the scenes self. Like this is where I talk about my struggles as an entrepreneur, a mom, a wife, a creator. Like it's the struggle bus. It's the travel bus. It's the come with me bus, right? Like, well, I'm on this like really hard journey. And maybe over on LinkedIn is like the super profesh version of me where I get to do things. Like, what are your thoughts? Like, do you think it confuses your brand or who you are or how you sell yourself? Or do you need to be this like same version of yourself on all these platforms, but like in different levels?
It's a great question. And it's a hard answer. And one that I've been talking about a lot this week, because in general, I am not super duper niche down. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like having the variety that I am because I'm building the brand that is me. I provide valuable travel tips, but I'm also an aviation nerd. And I also talk about food and restaurants and making new friends along the way. And for me, they might on paper not look like they overlap, but as soon as you get to know who I am, you see, oh, that all overlaps. And I think of that as the Gary Vee mentality, because he always talks about his different parts of his personality, which is, again, his very pro-business, but then he has the baseball cards and he has wine and he has NFTs and they all don't overlap, but they overlap because that's who Gary Vee is. So I kind of come in with that mentality, but I've also seen people that hit immense growth because they have niched down more. So I think it's really just finding what you want and not letting the numbers or the algorithm dictate what is making you happy. And I think because I still have the variety of my content is what has helped me combat burnout a lot, because I've seen a lot of people that niche down too much too quickly. They hit burnout because they're like, I am not flexing any creative muscles. I don't know where to go from here. Now people only associate me with this, and then I want to create other stuff, and they don't respond well to it. Whereas now I can still have things where I talk about hotels or about airlines or about travel products. Or I had a partnership recently where I was talking about, I did a fashion partnership because there's not a whole lot of women with my body type that are often perceived in the fashion world. And I talked about all of the fashion in a way of, does it travel well? Can I pack this? Is this good to be on the road with me?
You need so many plus size travel videos. Please make all of them.
Yes. And so it's one of those things there where you're like, you know, maybe I could grow quicker number-wise if I niche down, but that doesn't align with my long-term goals for me and my brand. So I can't get distracted by that shiny object and say, oh, well, follower count matters. And most of the people that are in my space that have been growing like crazy because they're super niche, they're not necessarily trying to monetize on a lot of things, where they're just part-time. And so it's like, you cannot compare other people's growth to yours, because you are your own niche, you are your own brand, and you have to look at it in the lens of what are your long-term goals. And you don't have to have an insane amount of followers to be able to still be monetizing and doing the things you want to do. And I had a friend lovingly sit me down recently and say, I think you're exactly the size that you need to be for what you're doing right now. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, I might not feel that way. And he's like, yeah, but I see it. And he's worked with people. He's worked with some of the big names. And he's like, you're not that much farther than when this person first moved to LA. And that put it in perspective of me. I'm like, oh, you mean that big top dog now? Like, oh, okay. And it's not comparing your starting line to someone's middle of their marathon.
I think that we cannot hear that enough. It is so easy to get sucked into the comparison game. Because like for me, like with my YouTube journey, I've been on YouTube for 6 years and I'm at 38,000 subscribers. And it's so funny because I did this video with vidIQ, because vidIQ is great. They're sponsored they're the title sponsor for the podcast. Like, they're super in support of what we do. I'm a big, huge, massive fan of their tool. It's amazing. It solves problems. It's great. But they solve the problems for YouTube. They don't have the tool doesn't talk about how to make money, right? It's not like what they're great at. They're great at talking about like YouTube monetization and stuff. So I did this video that talks about how to make money, a six-figure income as a small creator. And I broke down like, this is like, we had all of the receipts. Like, this is where my followers are at. This is like my longevity. This is my long-term videos. All of the things. I broke it down and shared it. Like, I was very public about it and like very open about where money came from and like how they could do it too. And I helped them get started and things that I wasn't doing that they could also try, all the things. And the comment section was so interesting to spend time in, because that's what you got to do to make your videos do good and like interact with the community, right? Because I love doing it. And it was literally like, if 38,000 subscribers is small, I am microscopic. How is she able to do this with like that few subscribers and I have like 100,000? Or the other arguments of like, you shouldn't be doing this for money. You should be doing it for the love of it. It was all that kind of stuff. It's always dudes too. It's always dudes. But But it was just one of those things that was like, it's just so interesting. Like, we as creators, like, we get obsessed with some of the wrong things, to the point where a guy, his name is Kevin, he actually did a video reacting to my video on vidIQ. And he was like, he's been a creator for a very long time as well. And he has like 7,000 something. He's in a smaller number than me. Like, I want to say under 10,000 subscribers on his channel. And he was like, the thumbnail of his video is like $186,000, 300 views. And he just did not understand how someone who would get when you looked at like my most recent videos, they'd be less than like 500 views on my videos. He'd be like, how? And like, you can literally watch his wheels turning through the video about like how his mind shift is changing. And I even made the comment, like, you said so few views a bazillion times in this video, and it's the wrong thing to focus on. Like, you have to keep in mind, if you were to put those 300 people that watched my video in a room, that'd be a really full room, right? Yeah. So it's like, you have to really kind of think through perspectives of how things work. It's so easy to get sucked up into numbers and not realize that your value lies in what you give to people and how you help them and like what your conversion rates can be. So if I have 300 people that watch my videos and like we're sponsored by StreamYard or Adobe, like that has a high return for those brands because they're a subscription model and it renews every month and they have upgrades and all these extra things that they can do. And they're not just like one-off purchases. They're like, well, someone's signing up. They're probably with us for a minimum of like 12 to 18 months, right? So it's this whole thing. So all that being said, like, don't obsess about the numbers, because your value is a lot to the right person.
Exactly. And building off of that, it's if you're thinking of just quote unquote focusing on the sales, a small ticket item versus a big ticket item is a huge difference. And so one of my other revenue streams is I've started hosting group trips. And that has been my way to be able to support the community, because some people, they want to travel, but they don't want to travel alone, or they don't have the time to plan everything out, or they don't want, there's a destination. I'm a very like savvy traveler. I've been to 53 countries, a lot of them solo. There's certain places I don't want to do by myself, and that's fine. So I've started hosting group trips, and these are big ticket item purchases. And to be able to sell 8, 10, 12, 20, whatever it is, these big ticket items, that holds a lot more worth than getting 100 people to buy a $5 trinket or something, or a one-time subscription that they canceled right after because they just wanted the free trial. And so people that have comments like that in videos, it's very much like you're comparing apples to oranges, and it's hard. And so I would just encourage anyone listening is really try to block out that noise and put it into perspective of what is valuable to your audience and then what is valuable to the brands that you are interested. Because if me coming to a hotel saying, hey, I can bring a trip of 12 to 20 people that are going to stay at your hotel for 5 days, that could provide a lot more value than just coming in and saying, okay, well, maybe I'll give you one TikTok. And some might say the opposite. If you have really high engagement, that might be worth it more, because like the hotel video I had that had 5.8 million views, I came back to that hotel a few months later and they said, do you understand how many people have come into this place and checked in and said that they saw that TikTok video and that's why they're here? And he's, because that brand did not have a TikTok before my video. And so
that's so funny. So you made them get a TikTok?
Yes. Well, because what's funny, and that's the thing, people never underestimate small creators. Because again, when I first made that video, I had 2,000 followers on TikTok. That company did not have a TikTok. The conversion was so strong that people in the thousands started following them on Instagram because they didn't have a TikTok to go to the point that HQ sat around saying, our Valentine's Day campaign finished. Where are all these followers coming from? And they found my video.
I love that. Well, and I think it's also funny you talk about with search with your niche specifically, and this applies to a lot of them. 40% of Gen Zers are using TikTok for search over Google. And yeah. I can attest to that. And I'm not a Gen Zer. I'm an elder millennial. Okay. I am very much like when we went to London, because we did a 2-week family vacation to England. And I was like, I want things to do, but I do not want to get stuck into 8,000 tourist traps. Like it's still the summer in the major cities. And so when I was looking for things to do, there were literally like towns I added to our itinerary because of one TikTok. Like we did in our road trip, we were like, okay, we'll go do these parts. And then I saw this really great video about this town in Northern Wales called Port Marion. It's literally a tourist town. You have to pay money to go into this town. And it's literally 100% a tourist town, but it's like super quaint and picturesque and has this like Roman feel. But then you can also go over to the ocean and you can walk along the coast and do that. And then you get to go on this like really pretty hike. It was this whole vibe. And bonus, that's where I bought my English tea set, because they had this like one of a kind unique store in this town. And after a week in England, I'm like, I must go home with the tea set, because I'm that cliche American. But like I use it a lot, so it's a whole thing. But it's that thing. Like I literally detoured our entire vacation to go to this town because of a TikTok video. Like that's power, and that's like influence. And it's, we're all play like in the travel space. And we're talking about travel and probably even like things that we all search for, like what should we wear? Where should we go? Where should we eat? We are so all played out on Google, because it's all about like who's been able to like SEO it the most, or they have paid ads for it, or it's literally just like, they have the really good budget for like a website or whatever, but the good stuff is always in TikTok or like from a local. It's like, I found this random hole in the wall place. That's the best place to go for this thing.
Yeah. And what's funny is that one of my also really high performing videos was 6 things to know before visiting Machu Picchu. And what makes me chuckle is because there's not a lack of content around Machu Picchu. Everyone's like, it's beautiful, one of the seven wonders of the world. But I'm doing all this research. I'm like, how do I get here? Like, what? And I'm like, I get that it's beautiful. How do I get here? What does it cost? And no one was telling me online that it takes three tickets, that it was a train ticket, a bus ticket, and then an entrance ticket. And I'm like, okay. And to know that it's so far from Cusco, because everyone's like, oh, Machu Picchu, Cusco. I'm like, no, this was far. And the one of the points that I had of my six was I noted where the bathrooms were. I was like, there is no bathrooms on the van. Then there's only a bathroom like at the bus station or like one tiny on the train. And then there's no bathroom in Machu Picchu. It's only at the entrance and you have to pay for it. And I felt kind of silly highlighting it. But then all of the comments were, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Or the comments of people saying, as an IBS girly, thank you for your service. And it's like those little things that Google's not going to tell you. It takes someone that's authentically sharing, this was my experience, to say, these are those things that you need to know that you will not see other places, because it might not be like the sexiest part of travel, but it's authentic.
I love that. Well, if you ever need a guest on your TikTok to talk about travel stuff, especially because I come with family travel, let me know.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to
contribute. I have so many things about not only like road tripping, I road tripped through England with my family of six. And wow. then we ended our summer doing a family cruise, our first time ever, the Disney Wish. And it's like all of my like to-dos and don'ts and things to know kind of thing. I have a lot as a mom.
Yes.
But I'm happy to collab. We can do that together because I love talking about – I should honestly talk about my – like I said, my TikTok where it's like this is where I'm a person. That's what I honestly should probably do. But I appreciate it. Oh, my gosh. Charlotte, we've just learned so much from you. Not just because of like what you talk about with your travel. Please, everyone, go follow her over on TikTok, at Charlotte from Chicago,
on all things TikTok, Instagram, yeah. YouTube Shorts, all the things.
As always, we have everything on our in our show notes over at womenofvideo.com. But you know, we talked about like how to get started, how to find UGC, how to create more than just what you're doing, how to build a brand, accepting our size. Like there was so much to take from this. I feel like this is a listen to twice situation. I don't say that often. So thank you, Charlotte, for your time, your expertise, everything that you've done to be here. Also for like, you know, the scheduling gymnastics you and I did to make this happen. I'm really grateful for that patience with you. So you, Charlotte, and everyone listening are impossibly amazing. Until next time. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode, so make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.